Hey folks, thanks for joining us here at Writers Meeting. I'm your host, David Pingree, joined by Bruce Murata, and our special guest today, Josh Hill of the Hill Brothers Duo. Josh, thanks for joining us, man. Stoked to have you on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is cool.
And I love that you're current, man. I mean, you're out there still riding Supercross, so you can, chime in with some opinions and thoughts that you have. And there was no shortage of drama back in St. Louis. So we're going to get to it. I want to start by thanking our sponsors, Rock and Turf. If you guys have any kind of artificial turf needs, they make really cool mats for outside of homes, garages, RVs, whatever. Check out at Rock and Turf on Instagram. Also, Maxxis Tires. They've got a full line of mountain bike tires. If you guys ride, pedal e-bikes, regular bikes, road bikes, whatever, hit them up. All kinds of cool stuff at Maxxis.com and Speedstrap.com. The best tie down solutions in the biz. We're stoked to have all of those guys supporting us. And man, we were chatting a little here before we got started about the 250 class kind of being a snoozer. I think we were all kind of, it seems like Levi Kitchen had been establishing himself as the guy these last couple of weeks, but boy, if he didn't put a stamp on it this weekend, this is his series.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I first off, I mean, man, let me tell you, I thought for sure Hampshire, as you know, Ping, I thought he was going to win up there, but man, his starts just couldn't get a start. So, I mean, that just, that's a bummer for him because man, that really cost him some points this weekend, not getting those starts. And yeah, I mean, like you said, I mean, Levi just really, he really made a statement this weekend. That's for sure.
Josh, what are you kind of seeing? And I mean, I don't know if you've got any kind of a special spot in your heart for Kitchen since he's kind of a Northwest boy.
Yeah, I mean, Kitchen, I've seen him when he was on 80s. And, you know, it's pretty cool to see how far he's come because he was always an extremely good rider, super talented. But, man, like the step forward that he's made the last, you know, I guess even just 5 years. But especially the last couple of years, it's pretty awesome. I know a lot of people up north are really stoked to see that. But yeah, the kid, he's a championship threat. He's 15 points up, three races to go. I mean, he's in a good spot. So I mean, it's cool to see. You know, I think this would be Mitch's first Supercross championship since like 2017. I think so. It'd be cool to see it done.
Yeah, it's been a hot minute. Old Mitch has probably been pulling his hair out a little bit because just injuries, man. He just couldn't get his guys to stay healthy. But I tell you, Levi has like, there's not a lot of chinks in his armor. He's been good in the wet. He's good when it's hard slick. The couple that we've had there, you know, Dallas, Phoenix, and his starts are good. His fitness is good. He's good on the Triple Crowns. Like, you can't punch any holes in this guy's game right now.
Yeah, that's for sure. Hey, I want to tell for both you guys, one thing that kind of stood out for me was Juju. That first main event where he made that pass on Kitchen on the first lap.
Yeah.
I mean, that kid's not scared to battle with these guys. You know, yeah, so I
like that he's scrappy. Like, you can tell he doesn't quite have the speed to run with that lead group just yet, but man, I love that he's at least he's trying. He doesn't just follow or go, oh, well, I'm not supposed to pass him. He's like, screw it. I mean, I'm gonna, you know, send it.
Yeah, the kid's got speed for sure. I mean, was it last year when he kind of started to make a splash in the futures? And
yeah,
he won, I think, what, A1 last year, is that right?
But yeah,
kid's got speed and he's not scared. He sends all the big crazy rhythm sections at the practice tracks you see, and I've seen him try some stuff that I don't think a 250 was ever going to make. And yeah, he's definitely not scared. He's got a lot of skill and he looks hungry, right? Like he's always trying to get up front.
Hey Josh, yeah,
go ahead, Bruce.
So Josh, what do you wish there was futures back in your day for as an amateur, like how do you feel of like the futures class?
I would have loved it because I had a supercross track in my back backyard as a kid growing up. I didn't have a motocross track. We lived just outside Portland on the Washington side of the border. And we had 7 acres and I had a rad supercross track. And I would have been probably racing that the very first day they would have let me. I would have been, I would have loved it.
So Ping, I want to tell you guys a story here. My earliest memory of meeting Josh Hill, and Josh probably doesn't even, you might not even remember this, Josh. So I was probably, because I'm just a little bit older than you, I was on a CR125. I think I was probably like 14 or 15. And Lake Elsinore had a supercross track out back. And I was riding the supercross track, but I'd practice like each week. I'd just get one section down. And I would just like double through. And man, I thought I was just this badass. Like, I'm like, dude, I'm this local kid on a CR125, like getting these rhythm sections down. And I was with a buddy, and this little kid comes up on a YZ80. And he's like, hey, do you mind if I ride with you guys? I'm like, dude, this kid's going to ride this track. But I didn't know it was you at first, Josh. You get on this track on an 80 and just starts throwing down triple. I mean, just hammering laps on this thing. Dude, I literally was just like packed up and that was it.
Like, I think it was it. Chris Panic used to work out
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
And he would be like, hey, nobody's watching. Like, you can go ride the supercross track now if you want. And I'd be like, really? So I just got there and just started figuring it out one day, just started busting the triple out. And because we'd come down from Oregon and just stay at our motorhome. And Elsinore was one of those places that they'd let you camp overnight.
Yeah.
That place would run. They had like 7 tracks back then.
Mm-hmm.
And they would run all day, like from sun up to sundown. And I'd go ride motos. And then when the place would like slow down and everybody'd leave, I'd go out and sneak on the supercross track.
And it was so funny because like you came up really quick. You're like, hey guys, you mind if I ride this with you? And I'm like, yeah, like good luck, dude. Like you're on an 80. And you just go there and you just made me look like an idiot. I didn't want to ride anymore. I was like, dude, here, I'm just trying to get this one section down. You're just pounding down laps. And he came up and I'm like, what's your name? You're like, I'm Josh Hill. And I'm like, oh shit, dude. Like, cause I knew you as an amateur kid, you know? And I was like, man, you just made me look like an idiot.
So, I had some fast 80s back in the day.
Yeah. So I had to share that memory.
Oh, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Yeah. All right. Well, looking at the Speed Straps 250 main results here, Kitchen crushed them, won all 3 of them. Good ride for Shimoda. We'd mentioned that a little bit in sight lap that we were kind of expecting him to come in and really swing, and he's got nothing to lose, and he really needs to show his new employers and himself that he can put the results in he's supposed to be putting in. And Smith third, no surprise there. He's plenty fast. RJ fourth. I did expect RJ to be in the hunt a little more. He really, this race was rough for him, man. He's down 15 points. Thrasher fifth. So anyway, like I said, it was a pretty boring night in the 250 class. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time there.
Yeah.
Unless you guys have anything else to add, because really all the drama was in the big class.
Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing. Yeah. Nothing really too exciting, like you said, Ping.
All right. Well, then moving on. Let's go to the Rock and Surf 450 main events. And Eli, although it didn't look like it on the night, goes 1-1-1, gets his first win. I think everybody's pretty stoked. And in fact, I called it. I was half bullshit.
You did.
I said, watch, Eli's going to win. So anyway, and for a minute, I think after the first main, like Plessinger was up there. I'm all, dude, I might have been right. I might actually guess right.
Yeah, I was thinking that. I'm like, God, that son of a gun.
But I want to talk about a couple things. Great night for Hunter Lawrence, leading that first one. And if he hadn't had that tip over, I would like to see if he could have hung on to that, because he's pretty good when he gets into the lead. He's pretty solid. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes. And then another guy that really impressed me on the night was Justin Cooper. He's been good all year, but man, he continues to take these little steps. He's, you know, hole shotting, scrapping with those guys, not letting them go. And he looked really good in the, I think it was the second or third one until he had that little tip over. But I was impressed with those two. So I wanted to start with that. Anything that you guys saw that kind of stood out from the night? Josh?
Yeah, Justin Cooper has been looking really good. Like, he gets good starts. He's fast. Like, he's up at the top of the time qualifying every weekend, like on the verge of being fastest, and he gets up front and runs like looks like he's going to podium a lot. And then I don't know, it seems like maybe he's just I don't know, maybe when the track gets a little bit rougher and things start to get a little shaky, maybe he's not quite used to how to react on a 450, because I mean, I can't imagine that he's out of shape, but he seems to not be able to like hold on for those last, you know, five laps when it, you know, when it counts.
So but do you think next year he might get that figured out, Josh? Is this maybe just like that rookie kind of learning year on a 450?
I mean, I have a feeling he'll get it figured out by outdoors. Like I see him, if he's on a 450 outdoors, which I don't know if he is, but I assume he is.
Yeah.
He would probably be pretty gnarly on 450 outdoors.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I'm curious to see how, because outdoors he seems to be more comfortable. I'd imagine he's racing the 450 outdoors, and I think we might see him up on the box, you know. And I think he's just got to figure out how to maintain that. I think mentally in Supercross, there's so much pressure and it's so intense for you know, that 20 minutes or whatever it is. It's like, I just don't think he can handle it. He's not used to it. And he's, look at this guy he's racing with him. It's stacked. So,
yeah.
Let's talk about the first big issue. This is the red cross flag that came out in the second main event. Here's my issue with this, you know, like they have to do something, right? Like as soon as it happened, I went, well, they got to penalize Jet. Like everybody harps on them for not being consistent with the penalties. So like the flag was out, you can't not penalize him. But then you see like five other guys come across and jump it. And it's just like, dude, obviously just holding the flag there while you're waving a checkered isn't getting it done. You know, five of the best riders we've got didn't see it. So yeah,
the ping has started on the last lap on the white flag. Like, it's so ridiculous how the white flag's waving right in front of it. Like,
yeah,
I mean, I'm curious to get Josh, what your opinion was on that, you know?
What I've seen is it was a tight right-hander up the face of the finish line, and the guy holding the flag was inside of the tower. And so it blocks your view pretty bad. I mean, if you would have had a normal, you know, 180 berm where you could actually come through the turn and kind of point your head and look, you would have seen it. But those guys that were going up the inside and then fading out, like that, it would have been pretty hard to see, I assume. Like,
yeah. And there's some ruts on it. So it isn't like a clear face where you can kind of pay attention to what's in your periphery. You're looking at the jump going, okay, like lining up for a rut. And they expect you to glance over and notice a flag that's just dangling. Like if you're going to put a freaking red cross flag out, there better be something, you know, where someone could really get hurt, right? Like to me, that they should have never put the red cross flag out. If he was off to the right side underneath between the two jumps, then just get the yellow and push him over to the left. Right?
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to put the red cross flag out, you get your fat ass out onto that lip of the jump and you make sure the guys can see it. Right? I mean, literally, even if you're out in the track, get out into the track, because if we're really trying to protect somebody here, okay, which I'm all for, rider's safety should be like paramount. But damn it, don't half-ass it then. Get out there and do your job. You know, shame on that flagger, because like, that was horseshit, and it was obvious that it was horseshit because five or six guys didn't see it. So yeah. I think that it's time to either have a discussion amongst those guys about, okay, is this flag system the very best thing we have? Because now let's say Freezy was off to the left, like on the left side of the track. Well, then the flagger, what could he really do? If he walked out, he'd be pushing him over towards him. So even the flag, you know, model that they're using is flawed. Like this is where I say either get blinking lights on top of every single big jump that's blind, or let's start using in-helmet communications to where you can go, you know, you can notify everybody.
Here's what I think. I think that had it not been the white flag and checkered flag lap, the flagger would have handled it. It would have been no problem.
Yeah.
In that red cross flag, he would have been getting it out there. But Ping, I don't know when the last time you flagged something was, but I was just doing it at riding school, like flagging kids off the track. It would have been pretty hard in a pressure situation to be holding both flags and doing it right while not falling off that structure. So, I mean, I know what you're saying, that something needs to change, like stuff's on the line, but I don't necessarily fault the flagger. Like, I don't know how much more he could have done aside from walk out onto the lip, but I don't know how accessible they are to get to the lip from where they're standing. So
I don't either, but they need to have that conversation is what I'm saying. Like, hey, okay, we need to put some extra dirt here so I can walk out and the flagger can actually, you know, all of the big jumps, in my opinion, should have a little platform where the guy can get up and get on it and really get in the track and freaking show that flag. I mean, they talk about this in when they're teaching the noobs that come in to flag. It's like, okay, if it's a minor tip over and they're out of the way, you can just hold the flag. The more serious it is, you need to really be like shaking it, waving it, directing them with it. The guy was just holding it there. And I get what you're saying. He was waving the checkered or the white with one hand, but he's just holding that thing there. Like, I don't know, man. It was very hard to see, or five guys wouldn't have jumped over him. Also weird how Vince Freeze found himself somehow involved in every freaking bit of drama.
That was going to be my next thing, dude. It just so happens to be Vince Freeze, dude.
What the heck? Neither thing was like, nothing was really his fault, but he was involved in everything. It's like, bro. Anyway, I hear your point, John. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm saying they need to come up with something better, because I don't know how much this, like, I don't think it really affected Jet's overall points. I think even if he didn't get Doc those positions, he still finishes only seventh instead of eighth. But still, it's a championship point, you know? Like, I don't know. I'd be pissed off if I was all those guys.
Yeah, I think the red lights work pretty good on the triple faces. You can totally see those. So they have the structure there for the finish line. It seems like a no-brainer that they could have those there too, so that the official could just hit the button, you know, like that, make it start blinking, and then the flagger can do his job. Because coming out of that corner, it was blind. They're turning right. They're looking left. You know what I mean? Like, they're trying to find the ruts. The guy's tucked in on the inside. It's just one of those deals. It was kind of a poorly designed setup, I think, is all it really was.
Yeah.
I don't know how much more that dude could have. I mean, he could have waved it a little bit harder, I guess. But, you know, he was probably looking over, seeing if Vince had rode off yet. You know, he's up on his feet. Do I really got to keep holding this thing out? Well, you know, what's... I'm sure he's got his ear telling him something too. I don't know. I don't always agree with the officials and everything that goes on, but I also don't envy their position that much.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. It's not an easy thing. He had a lot going on, but it's on them. If they're going to levy fines and fees and shit, then you guys have to make sure the riders see the flags, you know, make it obvious to them. So
It's been rough. It's been a rough year for the officiating and just running events in general. We had Daytona guys running on the track in the middle of the race.
Oh my god! Monster
girls in the track. We got. Man, it's been one weekend after another. So hopefully things mellow out a little bit.
God, that's right. I didn't. I guess I haven't really put them all together. But you're right. It's been some drama.
Yeah.
All right. So then let's talk about. We'll get to the results here in a sec, but let's talk about the other drama. Let's talk about the run in between Barcia and Jet, because the first thing I saw was, did you notice who was behind Barcia?
Yeah.
Vince Freeze. Okay. And so a lot of people hating on Barcia, and I'm like, dude, Barcia didn't do anything wrong. He probably knew it's that
covering
was Freeze was behind him. And if you look at the angle Freeze was coming in at, he was coming in to destroy. Like, if Barcia didn't protect it, he was going to get wrecked.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like trying to not get killed from Vince Freeze. He doesn't expect Jet to turn down the hit. To me, it's like, it's just racing. And what they should have done, if you want to fix that, take that little corner marker and push it in about 5 feet for the first lap. And then once things have spread out a little bit, you can slide it back out. Like, that would be my fix to it. And tell the guys you're going to do that. Hey, we're going to bump this turn marker in 5-8 feet, whatever it is, right? To keep people from being able to cut in so tight. And then we'll move it back out after the first lap, after everyone's come around. Or just don't leave it so wide. But I like having a big open turn like that, because you can, it does allow for block passing. But in a first lap situation where you've got everybody piled up, one guy cuts down, one guy goes to dive in and protect the inside, and now it's pretty much a head on. I've seen this happen in arena cross. Was Chad Pederson and maybe Clifford Adaptante. You know, arena cross is so tight, it's that same scenario where a guy cuts down early, one guy comes in to protect, and they went head to head and Chad Pederson got knocked out. So, I mean,
that was the Flying Hawaiian.
I think it was he and Pederson. But anyway, what were your guys' thoughts on that?
I'll let you go, Josh.
I think, that was the first thing I thought. Like, it was such a overly aggressive move that it didn't look like it could have been intentional. Like, I mean, Barsha is known to run it in, but that's like, there was no win in that for Barsha.
Right.
I think just what you said, he ran it in on Vince, the corner before, and just knew, like, I got to get out of here, you know, and just pinned it in there. And just so happened that Jet turned down, swung out wide and turned down. And Jet's probably so used to, at this point, moving forward and moving through the pack, that he didn't anticipate somebody coming from behind with more speed than him into that corner. So, I mean, it's just one of those things, you know. Jet, if he just, I mean, it's all, everything's great when you put it in rewind and you can figure it out, but, you know, maybe Jet shouldn't have went out so wide and squared up first lap of the race. And I think it was just probably Barsha trying to protect himself from the same thing happening to him. So
yeah, he had a freaking missile on his tail. Like, you gotta protect yourself. But I'm curious to see, like, what Jet learns from this, because you're right, Josh. Like, I don't think he's used to kind of having to deal with that. He's always got a cushion and he's moving forward. He's not used to somebody coming in right behind him, but the opening laps like that, that's just part of the deal. You can't, you know, and it reminded me, and I'm going to screw the year up, but you remember when Dungey and Stewart hit at Anaheim?
Yeah.
It was Anaheim 1, I want to say. I don't know, obviously, when those two are racing.
Would have been like 2016, right?
I don't even want to, 2016, 2017, maybe. I don't want to guess at the year, but Dungey was coming inside to protect. Same thing, it was a 180 before the finish. Stu cut down, and Dungey plowed him, and it knocked Stewart out. And I think it was kind of the end of his, like, that was kind of the last hit to the head, I think, that
kind of
squashed
that.
His career. Do you remember that? And yeah. I thought, it's the same exact scenario, you know, but Jet just managed to not get knocked out. And how lucky that he didn't get hurt. Like, that was a hit.
Well, that's something that I was curious about is, like, I mean, he just cruised that whole race. So, I mean, is he hurt? Have you heard anything? Like, you know, because, I mean, it's weird. Like, he just cruised around. Like, I mean, it would surprise me if he didn't get hurt from how hard that hit was, you know? But it was just weird how, like, he was just, he'd kind of go cruise, hit a triple, like, you know, and I don't know. It's kind of odd to me.
But he was still tripling rhythms and doing things that if you were hurt, if you had a hurt wrist or you had something was really bugging you, you wouldn't do. So
right.
I'm not sure. What did you make out of that, Josh?
My pure speculation is he's probably got a couple of severely smashed fingers.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when you hit somebody hits you so hard, it usually, like, just your fingers are usually the first thing to get smashed. Then that lights you up and you're hurting and you're shaking your arm and, you know, like,
tingly.
Yeah, you know, like, it, or maybe you hit the funny bone real hard. I mean, he seemed to be fine enough to go out there, hit all the jumps, look perfectly fine. And then, you know, when he's in the blue flag situation, I think he was maybe, what, two laps down in that race by the time he got remounted. I want to say it was something like that, or he was about to be a lap down, like, immediately, and was coming around for two laps down. So, yeah, I don't know, short race, and maybe just nothing to go for, I guess, at that point. Maybe just ride to make sure he was okay.
Well, yeah, I know the broadcast probably had everyone on the edge of their seats when Barsha was going to come around to lap him, and then they changed the shot of it. I was like, oh, shoot, it's something to go down right here. But it seemed like they were pretty cool. I mean, Barsha apologized after the race, and
Yeah, it seemed like Jet kind of patted him on the arm, like, you know, all good, dude. And I think once Jet watches the tape,
right,
for sure he's going to be like, yeah, it is what it is. Like, I know he, you know, Barsha wasn't coming in there to kill him. Yeah. I want to, there's one other sort of little just gossipy piece that I want to ask about is that Eli in the post-race conference said he's been nursing an ankle injury for the past 3 weeks. You know, he didn't say if it's his same one, you know, that had the Achilles injury or a different one, but is it weird that he doesn't just mention that when it happens or as it's going on? I mean, what were your thoughts? Did you guys hear that? And what did you think about it?
Yeah, I heard that. I mean, I don't know. It could be anything. He could have just twisted his ankle in a rut. You know, racing at those guys' pace for as long as they do with as sketchy and, for lack of a better word, as crappy the tracks have been this year. Like, it just, I mean, it'd be hard not to twist something up. He didn't make it that big of a deal out of it, but you know, these guys, for whatever reason, they don't want to let on to anybody that they have any issues, which to me, I think that if you're able to say you're a little bit hurt and then go out there and back it up, it just makes you seem like that much more of a badass. But I don't know. They just, everybody's real secretive with their injuries. Maybe they're worried about somebody running into your bad ankle. I don't know.
Yeah, there's two schools of thought there, Josh. Like, do you keep it a secret? Don't tell anyone, because if they think, oh, he's got a weakness now, he's going to get tired because his ankle hurts, then it gives them a little more motivation. Or do you tell him, and then just like you said, man, he's got a hurt ankle and he still beat me. Crap. You know, I'm not sure what's right, but he definitely takes the keep it quiet route.
I think just now with teams, I feel like have a lot more control of what's going on than they did back probably, you know, in my heyday and in your heyday. I think that maybe there's just there's a lot of media training, things you say you don't say, things you let on. So yeah, I'm not sure.
Apparently in Star Yamaha's media training, you can talk about morning wood.
when you're winning, you can talk about anything.
You can say anything if you're winning. That's funny. All right, well, let's get to some of the results here. I mean, the overalls, Eli Cooper Webb and Hunter Lawrence on the podium. And I was actually really stoked for Hunter. You know, I don't know. I just kind of root for him because I like how methodical he is. I like how he and his brother support each other. It would be real easy to be the younger or the older brother and be kind of salty that your little bro is getting, you know, whipping your ass week to week. And he clearly isn't. He, you know, they're both super supportive of one another. And I really like that. And Josh, maybe you can relate to that, just having a brother that's competitive with you. But I was just stoked for him. I thought it was a really good night for him to be leading that one main. And even though he did have a tip over, to still be solid enough to land up on the box.
Yeah, he's riding good. It'd be tough. I mean, I guess I don't think it would be tough, because I feel like for me, when my brother's doing good, I'm doing good. Even if I'm not winning, he's on top. Like that, I don't know, mate, but everybody's dynamic's different. I'm just always really proud of my, you know, my brother. But man, I was thinking about this, and let's just say, like, hypothetically, I'm the team manager of one of these, you know, Star Yamaha, hypothetically. Like, if I've got three fast dudes, I wouldn't even, you know, it's championship time. What is it, 8 points now?
Yeah, 8 points. Yep.
I would be telling those guys, like, dude, you guys need to start going rough on Hunter. Because, they may not be able to get Jet to engage with them with, you know, if they get into it with Jet, but if you start throwing blood in the mix and start picking on the brother, man, like that might be able to ruffle some feathers, you know what I mean? And get him off his game. So hypothetically, obviously I'm not, but, you know, I'm still just free riding, hang out, Joshua. I'm not team manager at Yamaha. But I'm just saying, hypothetically, I might start telling my guys, go rough up the brother.
That's an interesting take, dude.
It really is. Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
we talk really all the time, I mean, like, what do these guys need to do to kind of get Jet off of his game? Like, you know, rough him up, you know, maybe some mind games, you know, Coop needs to throw him some finger guns. We've talked about all these different things. It's never come up that, like, hey, maybe go pick on the older brother.
Well,
it's interesting.
And Jet's always so focused on him. I mean, you've seen it at some of the races. Like, he'll be just, his eyes are on him during the heat race. You know, if he's heat two and his Hunter's heat one, he's just watching him, cheering him on, or, you know, so it's like, yeah, maybe that would kind of, maybe that's what it'll be.
Hey, if on those nights, Jet's getting away from you, okay, plan B, going for
Oh, man.
Oh, all right. Well, if we start seeing Hunter get railroaded we're going to know they listen to this.
Yeah, you can thank Josh Hill for the advice on that.
I just know it hit home for me. You know what I'm saying?
So. Yeah, yeah.
No, dude, it's super interesting. Okay. Plessinger fourth, another great guy for him. I thought he might make it to the box. He was one of the guys that got penalized though. So it definitely hurt him on jumping the finish. Sexton fifth, man, he didn't have the night he needed. I thought he'd be better. At one point he was running like second and went all the way back to fifth. Like, he got shuffled back really quickly. And
I missed the first man. I was on the dozer.
Well,
Sexton went down, right?
Yeah, so Josh, the first main, Oldenburg crashed and just caused this huge kind of pile up. A lot of these guys just got thrown off on that one, and Sexton was part of that. So
was what AC got collected in? That was Freezy.
Yeah, no, that was free. No, but their first lap, Oldenburg went down. He came up short on that triple, went over the bars.
Oh, I thought that was Freezy. No?
No. At first, everyone thought it was Freezy, but it was actually Oldenburg.
Okay.
It was Oldenburg that went down, but Freezy was kind of part of it at the end of it right there.
Okay. Well, yeah. AC, that twisted his ankle, which was a bummer. We lost him for the night. But, yeah, that also collected Chase, huh?
Yeah. Yep.
Barcia, Stu, Jet was eighth. Justin Cooper, ninth. McElrath, 10th. That's kind of how the rest of that played out. Take us through the points here. I think we're sitting – what, Jets 244?
Yeah, so Jets 244, and then second, Cooper Webb, 8 down. Third, Chase Sexton, 20 points down. Fourth, Eli Tomac, 29 points down. Fifth is Ken Roczen with 42 points down. Sixth, Aaron Plessinger, 46 points down. Seventh, Jason Anderson, 56 points down. Eighth is Justin Cooper, 97 points down. Ninth, Justin Barcia, 106 points down. And then rounding up that top 10 is Hunter Lawrence at 111 points down.
So the problem here when you could say, man, these guys, you know, Sexton and Eli are still in it because if Jet is hurt or he DNFs a race, man, they're right there. But, yeah, but you're still 21 points down of Cooper Webb, you know, like.
Yeah.
So I really feel like it's kind of become a two-man battle. And this is what I want to ask you guys is, I think up until this weekend, I was like, all right, I think writing's on the wall here. Jet's setting sail. Like, this is, these guys can't stop him, you know? And Justin Barcia can't, apparently.
I was just going to say, thank you, Barcia, for keeping it interesting.
But I don't know, man. Now that you've got, you'll have a 2-week break. So I imagine whatever is sore or aching on Jet from that, he'll be fine. But we're going to, all the rest of the stadiums we're going to are open air. You know, we could get mud. You never know. Hell, all year it's been mud. So that throws definitely a wrench into things. And then elevation at the final round is always a little different, you know. What do you guys think is going to happen here moving forward? Like, what? Let's start with you, Josh. Like, how do you see this playing out now? Did momentum shift a lot? Or do you think Jet comes back even more determined? Like, what do you see?
I think it got interesting, right? Had that not happened, had the Red Cross thing not happened, had the Barcia thing not happened, like, and Jet just would have went, you know, even if he would have got second behind Eli in the overall, like, it would have been looking pretty grim for everybody, you know, mm-hmm. for Cooper included. Now 8 points. You're gonna go, what do we got? Foxborough, Nashville, Philadelphia. All three mm-hmm. of those have a chance of weather. And then you've got, like you said, the elevation, Denver, Salt Lake. I mean, I've raced Salt Lake in the snow. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of things can happen. But I think that the Yamaha guys got to be pretty fired up. They got to be liking the way this is going, right? And Jet is probably going to be, you know, thinking this is his to lose, which he should be thinking it's his to lose. So when you get those two different frames of mind, that can mess with your, you know, that could motivate one side and mess with another side. So I guess it's really going to be a test of Jet's mental strength, not let alone everything else. But the kid's never really faltered any other way so far. So you can't really bet against him. But I think the Yamaha guy's got a shot in the arm.
Mm-hmm. I think the big kicker here is going to be weather. I would almost guarantee. I think if you could just map out these last five and they're dry, typical supercrosses, I think Jet's got it. He went undefeated outdoors. He dealt with as much pressure as you could possibly get from Roczen at the last SMX round for all the marbles for $1 million. Didn't flinch, actually like rose to the occasion. Pressure doesn't really seem to bother him. If anything, it's boredom. He gets out front and just kind of makes a dumb mistake and falls. But you throw mud into the mix, you throw rain, you throw hell. I think 96 in Denver, the wind was blowing so damn hard, you could barely do the jumps. You remember that, Josh? Were you there in 96? Or am I? I'm going too old for you now.
I was 6 in 96. I do remember. I mean, I had every race on tape, but I couldn't tell how windy it was.
Okay. Well, anyway, crazy stuff could happen there too. I mean, there is weather possibilities at every single round we have left. So, I think that the biggest mix-up could be the weather, and it doesn't mean, I'm not saying Cooper is a much better mud rider than Jet. Just, you know, shit happens. Like in the mud, you know how it is. First turn crash or crash and stick your throttle hand into the muck. You know, like so many things could happen. So I don't know, man. It's going to be pretty exciting because Cooper Webb digs in like a tick at the end of these things. And I think he's probably a little bummed about how he went out last year with that concussion. And, you know, I think we all went like, oh, it was Eli's championship last year until Chase got hurt. But Webb was right there, like right there. And so I think he feels cheated a little bit. He wants his lunch money back. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think there's two, you know, Jet, you're right. He rightfully should feel like it's his series. But Cooper is like, no, I'm coming. Like, it's down to 8. That's what I needed. Let's go.
Yeah. I got a super hot take here.
Okay.
Jet Lawrence is the fastest dude in Supercross right now.
Yep.
Not that hard to, you know, hard to think about, but Cooper has this thing about him where when the pressure's on, his back's against the wall, like the dude just finds speed and he just thrives on these moments.
Mm-hmm.
If Jet is able to figure out how to thrive in these moments and not let the pressure get to him, not make mistakes. I mean, Cooper's going to have to be really, really solid to make this a push to the end, but you know, Jet has to also be really, really solid. Like it's going to, the field's so stacked right now. We have 6 winners this season. So I think that ties the most riders to win a premier class in Supercross history. I'm trying to remember when that was, but I think 6 is the most that's ever happened. And there's still guys that Jason Anderson has the speed to do it. There's a couple of guys that could even potentially still win and make it the most, you know, winners in a season. So that's going to play a part in getting up front. If you get a bad start, it makes it so hard to get forward. And the tracks as rutted as they are, it hasn't seemed to be a problem for Jet getting through the pack. But when it's like slot car racing, it's kind of hard to get around these guys. It's not like the old days in Supercross where you could just cut under somebody and square up anywhere you wanted in the turns. Now to make a pass, like you almost have to take somebody's rut from them and push them out of it. And when that happens, all it takes is somebody to not give up and then fall over on you. And then all of a sudden you're both down because you're in a rut and your front end washes out. So I'm just excited. I'm glad it's not going to be a snoozer. I'm pumped for the season.
Yeah, I think, like you said, Josh, I think Webb, he likes this kind of, like, where he's at in this position right now. And like you were saying, too, I mean, he's got a solid team. Justin Cooper, Eli Tomac. I mean, man, it could get dangerous for Jet here. And like you said, we all know Jet's the fastest, but I mean, I don't know, man. I think Webb's going to really put some pressure on Jet these next few rounds rounds.
What do you guys think if it comes down to it, and you know Hunter would help his brother, right?
Mm-hmm.
Get out of the way, hold somebody up, whatever he's got to do. Do you think that Eli would get on board and like let Webb go by? If let's say he's leading around, Webb's behind him and Jet's in third. Does Eli, you know, at Colorado, let's say we're in Colorado, points are tight, Eli's leading. Does he let Cooper Webb go by for a win? Like, I just can't see that happening. Yeah.
Especially if this could possibly be like maybe his last year, you know? I don't know. That's a tough one. What do you think, Josh?
Oh, I don't know. I've been around Eli for a really long time. Like, I probably see him for the first time in like 2001. And I still don't know Eli super well to have a sense of what he would do in that situation. You know, I don't know.
He's very guarded. Dude, I sat down for 3 hours and did a whiskey throttle show with him. And when the first time I saw him last year, he didn't even I'm like, hey, what's up, Eli? He looked at me and just walked away.
That's I was going to share that. Yeah. And I got to work with him a lot back in the Alias days when he was on Geico. And man, he was the only one that just to himself on the team, like just focused to himself, you know, like there'd be times where he might like joke around a little bit, but man, let me tell you, I mean, it was just kind of all about him, you know? So
yeah. Cooper could have some good, you know, they might be putting their boots on, you know, he might be throwing some numbers out there.
Cooper, I could see Justin Cooper doing it for Webb for sure. But Tomac, man, I don't know.
Yeah, I just don't either. It's going to get interesting. I guess that's the bottom line. We can sit here and BS about it all we want, but it's going to be a fun, at least round to round, it's going to be fun to watch and see what happens. It just got much more interesting.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Anything else you guys have that you wanted to mention? You got any other notes, Bruce?
That's pretty much it, Ping. I'm just missing seeing Josh Hill out there. That's the only thing.
Yeah. Josh, I was hoping I was going to see you at that arena cross in Oklahoma, and that didn't happen. Uh-huh. And then I haven't seen you in Supercross or anything.
Yeah, what did I do? I decided to race Phoenix instead of go to Oklahoma that weekend. And then I had that was why I didn't go. And then I was thinking about racing Daytona Arena Cross and just got busy trying to get my stuff together for Supercross. But I definitely want to make it to an Arena Cross sooner or later. I'm going to hit Nashville for sure. My wife just said she wants to go to Foxboro, so I might go up there. I wasn't really thinking it. And then, I don't know. I'm going to race Nashville for sure. But then I could also be at all the last five. I don't know.
Awesome, man. Well, hopefully we see it more, and good luck at Nashville. And man, we appreciate you taking the time to jump on and do this, man. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, for sure, Josh.
All right, quick thanks to our sponsors again, Rock and Turf, Maxxis, and Speed Strap. If you guys are in the need for turf tires or tie downs, hit up our guys. They're the best. Thank you so much to Josh Hill. Keep an eye on him. If you guys are going to Nashville, swing by and say hi. You'll be pitting with your brother there out of the tether rig?
No, I just got my own motorhome with the garage and just pull up. It's just like a nice camping trip with me and my wife, and bring out a mechanic.
Just a nice mellow camping trip where we race Supercross.
Yeah.
I love it. All right. Well, go say hi to Josh Hill. Thanks again, Josh. Bruce, thanks, buddy. I appreciate it. And always swing by on Thursdays where we'll have Sight Lap as we look ahead. Obviously, that won't be this week. It'll be the next week because we do have a weekend off. But every Thursday, we got Sight Lap looking ahead to the next coming round. So we'll look at Foxboro and break down what we think is happening there. So thanks, guys. Appreciate everybody listening. Take care.